Radio Catskill.
From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Farm and Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. This week on Farm and Country, we're traveling back in time to the 1930s. The Catskills Reservoirs delivers over a billion gallons of fresh drinking water every day. Building those waterways changed the lives of thousands. We visit a new exhibit at the Time and the Valleys Museum in Grahamsville to learn what rural life was like before the reservoirs. Plus, ever heard of a Community Preservation Act? In our second half of the show, we sit down with Michael Sweden, community liaison of the Orange County Land Trust, to learn about a tool for farmers to permanently protect their land from future developments. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report. But first, news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. The controversy over disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein is shaping up to be a major speed bump in President Trump's second term. California Democratic Congressman Ro Khanna is calling for all of the files in the Epstein case to be released, saying the issue goes to the heart of trust in government.
It goes to the heart of whether our government is granting impunity to the rich and the powerful who may have abused, assaulted, abandoned young girls, or whether we're going to stand up for children and stand up for truth. And many people view it as an issue of whether our government in Washington has been corrupted.
President Trump has called on Attorney General Pam Bondi to produce relevant testimony as long as the courts approve. Late yesterday, he filed a $10 billion defamation lawsuit against the Wall Street Journal and media mogul Rupert Murdoch over a journal story about Trump's ties to Epstein. A number of people were critically injured early this morning in East Hollywood when a vehicle drove into a group of people outside a nightclub. Steve Futterman reports.
The incident here occurred around 2 o'clock in the morning. Dozens were congregating outside the entrance to the Vermont Club, a popular gathering spot, when suddenly a car came racing through. Adam Van Gerpen is a captain with the L.A. Fire Department.
Initially, there were so many people here, our firefighters had to triage. There was bystanders were helping each other out because there's so many patients.
Around 30 people were hit. Some suffered critical injuries. Among those injured was the driver of the car. According to people at the scene, the driver had been inside the club and was asked to leave. The incident took place soon after that. For NPR News, I'm Steve Futterman in East Hollywood, California.
Gaza health officials say at least 72 Palestinians have been killed by the Israeli military across Gaza today. Officials say that figure includes more than 30 who are trying to get food through a U.S.-backed distribution initiative. Here's NPR's Emily Fang reporting.
A hospital in southern Gaza reported 31 people died from Israeli artillery fire while trying to collect food from the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. That's a U.S. and Israeli-backed group which has replaced the United Nations in distributing food and aid. But hundreds of Palestinians have been killed since late May by Israeli gunfire or in stampedes triggered by warning shots trying to get that food. Israel's military said, quote, suspects approached them, they fired warning shots, and, quote, there are reports of casualties that they are investigating. Because Israel's military has let in so little food and the dangers of getting that food, Gaza's hospitals say people, including infants, are dying of hunger and malnutrition. And Gaza health officials say a, quote, catastrophic famine is now threatening thousands of more lives. Emily Fang, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
And you're listening to NPR News.
I'm Catherine Marr, CEO of NPR. At the White House's request, Congress just voted to eliminate all federal funding for public media. This decision by Congress hurts communities across the country. It means fewer voices that dare to ask difficult questions or reflect on the full richness of who we are as a nation. Fewer stories about what connects us and brings us closer together. And for millions, especially those in rural areas, it means losing access to trusted local news, emergency alerts, and the everyday connection and companionship that public media provides. But here's what will never change. Our commitment to you. NPR and public media exist to serve the American public, to bring you rigorous journalism without fear or favor, to connect communities, in moments of both crisis and joy. Public media has always been powered by the people it serves, people like you and me, who believe in a free and independent press. So I'm asking you to act now. Your donation will make an immediate difference. You will ensure public media remains free and accessible to all. You will enable this essential American service to survive and thrive. Please go to this station's website and give what you can. We are here because of you, to serve you, and with your help, we always will be.
Radio Catskill needs you now more than ever. Please stand with us. Keep public radio in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Cy Sims Foundation, partnering with organizations and people since 1985, working for a better and more just future for all. More information is available at CySimsFoundation.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farming Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. Well, it is summertime here in the Catskills, and like many of you, I have been spending as much time as I possibly can outside, just soaking in the sun, swimming, being by the water. And I've been thinking a lot about our access to water and just how important this resource is to the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley region. Last month, I attended this new exhibit opening called the Lost Catskill Farm at the Time and the Valleys Museum. And if you haven't been there yet, it's in Grahamsville. And I learned just so much about water, clean drinking water, but also that providing clean drinking water comes with a cost. The Catskills Reservoirs delivers over 1 billion gallons of fresh drinking water every day to New York City, as well as other parts of the state. But when the reservoirs were built and expanded decades ago, it also displaced more than 5,000 people, animals, and many small businesses. Here are just some of the conversations I had during my visit to the new Time and the Valleys Museum exhibit. You may be wondering, what farm is Kimberly at today? Well, I'm actually at a farm recreated for a new exhibit at the Time and the Valleys Museum in Grahamsville, New York. On Main Street, up the hill past the museum, you'll find 19 new original restored buildings, one with a mechanical cow inside a calf shed that looks like a regular farm scene. There is a water bucket on the floor, hay on the ground, and a vintage shovel leaning up against the wall. Many of these restored buildings actually originally stood in other parts of Sullivan County. From the 1930s through the 1950s, these buildings were home to families, farmers, small business owners, and many, many animals. But everything changed when New York City came looking for a new source of drinking water. Richard Coombe is the board president of the Time and the Valleys Museum. He said the new Lost Catskill Farm exhibit is a testament to what rural life was like before the reservoirs.
We just opened a Lost Catskill Farm, which not only deals with life in the 1930s and the taking for New York City for water and displacing the people, but it also tells a story of watershed protection programs here and into the future, where the city actually helps through CWC, the Catskill Watershed Corporation, and WAC, the Watershed Ag Council, to help farmers and to help communities have a future, and yet at the same time have certain rules and regs on them in order to protect New York City's water, which is 10 million people.
Every day, the Catskills reservoirs supply more than 1 billion gallons of fresh drinking water across New York State. But behind that water supply is a story many people don't know. When those reservoirs were built, more than 5,500 people lost their homes. Roughly 1,500 people from the Roundout and Neversink reservoirs alone were displaced, according to the museum.
And we were just talking about this right before, but tell me, why is the story of water in the Catskills so important?
Well, I think it's so important because water is becoming so scarce worldwide, and while 70% of the water in the surface of the Earth is water, and 70% of your body is water, only 2% of that water is potable because it's salt water or it's deep underground or in the clouds and or polluted. So for young people and other people to learn about the importance of water, I think, is crucial. But the Catskills become even more important, and that's why our mission is connecting water people in the Catskills, because 10 million people get their water from here, but we live here, we have livelihood here, and we drink the water too. And so I think it's critical that we tell a story about the importance of water.
Inside one of the restored old barns is a 1936 Rio Speedwagon. At the June exhibit opening, Sandra Gary shared fond memories of her family's history from the 1930s. The Speedwagon belonged to her father, Raymond.
Our dad acquired the truck in 1972 from Clarence Leibold, who lived in Maston Lake. Clarence was the original owner who purchased it new. Dad was the second owner. It was in pristine condition other than two dents, one in each fender that Art Metnick from Woodburn repaired. He repainted the truck in the original colors of black, gray, and red. Our father enjoyed many opportunities driving his truck at no more than 15 miles an hour around the county, although it could go 40.
Since 1978, the Speedwagon has been in storage, bouncing from one family member's barn to another.
It was time to find a more worthy home for his personal treasure, and so here we are, and not a better place for it, really.
The Grahamsville exhibit now houses dozens of period-era artifacts, tools, and equipment that they used in smokehouses and maple sap houses. As you walk along the exhibit's third path, you'll come to Rowan Agarwal's favorite part.
The sawmill, I think, might be the highlight. I mean, that's just so big, so powerful. Like, that's super cool.
Agarwal is a commissioner of the New York City Department of Environmental Protection. Inside one of the larger sheds is a large stationary sawmill, which used to power water wheels and later on water turbines in the late 1920s.
You know, the working water wheel, of course, all kids love a water wheel, and we're all kids at heart, right? It's a wonderful thing to watch.
Agarwal admits that it's a little awkward being in the Catskills speaking at the exhibit as the New York City's DEP commissioner, given the reservoir's dark history of displacement. But he's hopeful that New York City has been able to shift its relationship with the Catskills from a negative one to one generally positive.
No relationship is without its disagreements. That's okay, right? But what matters is that we work it through with respect, with mutual appreciation, and with a view towards creating value for everybody and recognizing everybody's needs.
Agarwal said the exhibit is a remarkable piece of Catskills history.
It shows the human side of the people who lived here 100 years ago. It shows both the importance of the water system to the 10 million people today who drink New York City water every day, but also the price that was paid by some of the lost towns and the people who were displaced. And so I think it's a phenomenal educational asset, a great tourist attraction, and a real insight into who we are and how we got here.
Museum Board President Richard Coombe said that putting the exhibit together was a big community effort.
I think what surprised me most was the outpouring of community support. We had 413 people from $5 up to very large numbers, provide resources and cash. On top of that, you might have heard me mention a few key contractors, but on top of that, so many contractors gave of their time and energy and so much volunteer labor and so forth.
One of those supporters was Dwight Coombe. He helped restore a 1920s Fortson tractor, along with a two-bottom plow typical of what the tractor would have pulled back in the day. He said that learning about the Catskills back in the 1930s is important to understanding how we got here today.
There are a lot of people, even my age, but even the younger folks, the kids in school, that are coming and learning about the history of these valleys, learning the history, learning what it was like back in those days, growing up and farming and so on, and that it wasn't so easy like it is today.
Richard Coombe says it's the people behind the exhibit and their dedication that brought the stories of the past to life.
So I think what surprised me was just how real these buildings have turned out to be. And second of all, it's almost heart-touching when they have a history of where that building was and how it was moved here, and along with that, who donated it and who paid for it. And so it's brought alive life in the 1930s and the taking, but I think more importantly is it is just gorgeous. These barns are vanishing off the landscape, and now we know these are going to be here in perpetuity.
The Time in the Valleys Museum is open to the public on Saturdays and Sundays through the end of September from 12 to 4 p.m. In Grahamsville, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill. Thank you to all the folks I spoke to for that report. If you haven't been there yet, I really recommend the exhibit if you're in the Grahamsville area. I didn't have enough time to explore the actual indoor museum at the bottom of the hill, but I know that there is a ton of great interactive exhibits, especially for kids, about how the water system actually works and all sorts of fun things. So if you're interested, you can find more information at timeandthevalleysmuseum.org. Well, you know what time of the week it is. Up next, this week's Star Talk report from Keith Hubbard.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. One of the more prominent star patterns in the summer sky is the asterism known as the Summer Triangle. This asterism is made of three bright stars in three different constellations. The Summer Triangle is even visible on moonlit nights or from the light-polluted skies of a city. The three stars of the Summer Triangle are the brightest stars in the constellations Cygnus the Swan, Lyra the Harp, and Aquila the Eagle. The stars in the constellations that make up the Summer Triangle are Deneb, Bega, and Altair. Together, these stars form a large isosceles triangle that is very conspicuous in the sky. Looking up from the eastern sky, the triangle is angled downward with Altair at its apex. Deneb and Vega form the base of the triangle, with Deneb situated lower in the sky than Vega. Deneb is one of the farthest stars that we can see with our naked eye. It is more than 1,400 light years away from Earth. Vega is a brilliant blue-white star. It is the fifth brightest star in the night sky and will become the pole star in 11,000 years. Altair is one of our closest stellar neighbors at 16.8 light-years away. The Milky Way passes between Vega and Altair, with Deneb lying in the Milky Way. Currently, the Summer Triangle is high in the eastern sky at sunset and will remain in the sky all night. Look for this geometric pattern in the sky on these summer nights. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
Thanks to Keith Hubbard for this week's report. So I want to talk about something that affects all of us here in the region, and that's farmland. Our region is home to so many incredible and hardworking and dedicated farmers who take care of our land and feed us. And I recently heard about something called a Community Preservation Act. Admittedly, I had not heard of it before, and I was low-key intimidated because it sounded kind of clunky. But as I learned more about it, I was like, okay, I am intrigued. The reason we're talking about it on Farm and Country today is because Sullivan County is currently considering participating in what's called the Hudson Valley Community Preservation Act. And what a Community Preservation Act does is it allows a community to preserve open spaces for the purpose of agriculture, historical sites, affordable housing, for example, and prevent it from future developments. And I chatted with Michael Sweden, community liaison of the Orange County Land Trust, over the phone to learn more about this tool and what it means for Sullivan County farmers. Why don't we start with, if you want to tell me more about the Orange County Land Trust and what your role there looks like.
Sure. I joined the Land Trust only in 2024. I had been the supervisor in the town of Warwick in Orange County for 22 years. And I joined the Land Trust because of my experience in farmland preservation in Orange County and in town of Warwick in particular. The Orange County Land Trust has been around a long time in Orange County. It has preserved over 7,000 acres in Orange County. Most recently with Sugarloaf Mountain, they managed a deal there to secure that for public access with Orange County and some partners like Scenic Hudson. It's so important for the Hudson Valley to have a good source of local food to keep our family farms going. And this is a tool through easements that allows that to happen.
Yeah. And I mean, 7,000 acres of land is no small feat to preserve. And I understand that that has only continued to grow with the Community Preservation Act. Tell me a little bit more about what a Community Preservation Act is and why exactly is it so important for Orange County?
Sure. So Preservation Act. So it didn't actually pass in Orange County. It passed in Ulster County in 2019. Orange didn't get it successfully done. But it's a tool in which a municipality, through legislation authorized by the state of New York, can go to its voters in a referendum to impose a small real estate transfer tax on land within their municipal boundaries. That money gets dedicated to land preservation, a series of different things, farmland being one, open space, critical environmental resources, water resources, things like that. There is a bill that was passed in 2006 in called the Hudson Valley Community Preservation Act. And what that does is it allows if you're one of the counties designated in it, there are three, Westchester, Putnam, and Ulster currently, you can have any municipality within that county go right to a referendum of its voters. That's to create what's called a community preservation plan, which maps out the role for acquisition of properties. And then it provides, again, a matching source of funding that allows you to then be a real player in seeking grant funding.
And I know that you mentioned that, let's say I'm a farmer, I have to go through this application process. Who essentially will decide which properties are selected?
Well, so it, for instance, in the grant funding round, it gets submitted to the state, and then the state ag and markets, they rank all the properties. Usually they allocate X number of dollars per region and county. So there's a pool of money, and then they rank them based on the soils, productive soils, development pressures, items like that, and they make their awards. Then once the award comes out, there's a process that you go through. You work through with the farmer, the landowner, the easement language that you're going to impose, because an easement is an in perpetuity deed restriction on the property. And generally what it's precluding is a residential development on the property. And that's the point, because you're saving the productive farmland soils. And again, it may go to a different owner at some point. The landowner still owns the land, even though they've sold the development rights and been paid for those. They still own the land. They would hopefully then sell it to other interested farmers, young people. There's a lot of young people interested in farming, believe it or not. And so this is a mechanism by which you make that land affordable, because you've stripped off that development value.
I see. Yeah. Super, super interesting. Have farmers been relatively receptive to this tool? Like, what have you heard from them?
Yeah, I think that they have. And we're excited to be working in Sullivan County. Thank you to an effort by Cornell Cooperative Extension of Sullivan County and support from the Sullivan County Legislature. They're very interested in promoting farmland preservation. They see the importance economically and environmentally and socially from preserving active farms. So I just think it's going to be a great tool. There are a lot of farmer interest, and we are soliciting in Sullivan County with CCE different landowners throughout the county to see their interest. It is not for everyone. Some folks just don't see the fit. But many farmers, they love their land. They've worked their land, in many cases, generationally. So they may not want to farm going forward. They may be retiring, but they do want to see the land staying in productive agriculture. So I think it's exciting time in Sullivan County, and I think we're excited to be a part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, as you mentioned, you know, Sullivan County, we're exploring what a Community Preservation Act could look like in our county. I'm wondering if you could share just a little bit about what farmers may need to know if they are a farmer in Sullivan County and are interested in this tool.
Sure. So we have Sullivan County CCE has put on their website a what we call a pre-application form. And they're going to be getting notices, landowners, large landowners, farmers in Sullivan will be getting a notice from CCE that they can fill this out. There's no obligation, and this is important to the landowner. There's no obligation until you actually get to the table where you sign an agreement to place an easement on your land. So you can back out at any time. The idea is to understand what the value is to you from placing an easement. They'll fill this application out. It will come to back to either myself or CCE. We will then get it to the Sullivan County Ag Board, which will look at it. And again, it's a ranking system. Obviously, you want to preserve the prime soils or the soils of statewide significance because those are the best soils for growing crops. So that's a heavy weight in which applications might get submitted for a grant. Because that's the state's goal as well. The state wants to preserve farm land, right? They want to be able to make sure there's a source of viable farmland going into the future
right.
for New York State and its residents.
And what are the next steps here? Obviously, I imagine that there needs to be deep collaboration between both farmers and intermediaries like Sullivan CCE and lawmakers.
Yeah, absolutely. To be included, so as I mentioned in the top of this, there was an act that's on the books called the Hudson Valley Community Preservation Act. There are three counties in it. Ulster got included in 2019, thanks to then Senator Jen Metzger. So what we've talked to the Sullivan County Legislature about is we'd like the Sullivan County Legislature to issue a home rule requesting to be included in the Hudson Valley Community Preservation Act. Why is that important? Because when Warwick did it, we did it on our own. So as a municipality in New York, you can submit a home rule request. We did that. But it took us 4 years to go through that process to get a bill through the legislature and signed by the governor. By having Sullivan County in the Hudson Valley Community Preservation Act and approved and signed off by the governor, that would allow any municipality to then put together their plan and go to their voters in a referendum. So they actually skip that initial step that could take them 3-4 years. And the fact is, development pressures happen all the time, and we need smart growth in areas, but we also need to preserve our active farms. So time goes very quickly in those cases, and that's why it's important to have the tool in place, and we're encouraging Sullivan County in the next legislative session for the state to submit that home rule request.
I've been chatting with Michael Sweeten, community liaison of the Orange County Land Trust. Michael, thank you so much for chatting. I'm really excited to see this continue to evolve in Sullivan County.
Yeah, we are excited too, and we thank you for the time to get this message out. We hope that we can come back and talk about it a little bit more in the future.
Of course. Thank you so much, Michael. Thank you so much to Michael Sweeten for that conversation. If your wheels are turning like mine after listening to that conversation with Michael and you have questions about kind of how this would work in Sullivan County, I think that's a good thing. The Orange County Land Trust is working directly with the Sullivan Cornell Cooperative Extension and the county legislature on this initiative. And you can find more information on the CCE website at sullivancce.org or by giving them a call at 845-292-6180 with any questions you might have. And that's our show for this week. I'm Kimberly Izar. Thank you to all of our guests this week for their wisdom and reflections. This show was produced by the Radio Catskill editorial team and post-production by Ronald Kelson. Thanks for being here with me. Up next, it's Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, NPR. I'll catch you next week.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Morgan Outdoors. Celebrating 20 years as a local source for hiking, snowshoeing, and discovering the great outdoors. On Main Street in Hurleyville, near the rail trail, morgan-outdoors.com.